Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Now, live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live today from the stadium. It used to be Mile High Stadium. That got torn down. The new one was built. It was Invesco, and the locals didn't so much like the corporate branding, and so the compromise, as Carl Wolfson, our morning host on KPOJ, gave me the whole history lesson on this morning, the compromise was to officially name it the Invesco Stadium at Mile High. So anyhow, that's where we are. We're broadcasting live here from the Air America booth, and talk radio news, and they're, you know, right down the road from them, and give you a little information about some of that that's going on here as well in as we go on with the morning. Joe Biden gave a speech last night that the first time, and probably because I'm a father and you know and a man, I guess, but that brought tears to my eyes. I mean, it it was amazing. It was Joe Biden's speech, and it was just amazing. Justin Rockefeller's on the line with us. He's heading up a group called Generation Engage. Justin, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Holding in there. It's been a busy week, and we're all running on fumes, but it's fun, and you're not doing it right if you're not exhausted, right?
Yeah, let me tell you. Justin, first of all, what's your affiliation with the Rockefeller family? Are you associated, you know, related to Jay, for example?
Very directly related. He's my father. I'm the youngest of his four children.
There you go. Okay. And tell us about Generation Engage.
It's actually reasonably similar to the DNC and the RNC, just in that we are investing in leaders. It's a nonpartisan membership organization that connects young people who don't go to college with political leaders, both at the local level and the national level. So we're giving access to young people for politicians, and we're also giving access to politicians for young people. And the way we do it is that we invest in social entrepreneurs, young people who have a very specific vision for the change that they want to affect within their own communities, and an even more specific plan for how to go about achieving that vision. So we know that one formula doesn't work in New York City, and the same formula is going to work in Raleigh, North Carolina. Young people at the local level are the key. They've got the answers. If we invest in their social capital, they'll be able to persuade their friends and connect the dots for young people in the political process.
Great. And the website is?
GenerationEngage.org.
And so if somebody goes to the website, or if somebody decides that they want to participate in this, what's involved?
Right now we're in several communities. San Jose, California, South Florida, Miami mostly, Charlotte, North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, and New York City. So you can get involved at the local level in any of those places, but we are looking to expand all 50 states.
Are you looking for people to start Generation Engage programs?
Absolutely. We're looking for social entrepreneurs. They exist in all 50 states. All we need is some funding to get started, and we can do it.
That's great. Okay, and people can check it out at generationengage.org.
That's it.
Is that right? Justin, I'm curious, you know, you were here last night. What did you think of the gig?
It was an emotional night, and I was actually sitting with the West Virginia delegation with my father. He did speak on national security, mm-hmm. and that was emotional for me, but also, you know, hearing the former president, Bill Clinton, fully endorsed Obama, saying he's ready to leave. That was an emotional moment. when Hillary handed over the key, her delegates, that was emotional. Joe Biden with his adorable grandchildren and his powerful speech. It was an emotional night. I really loved it.
Yeah, if Bo Biden was running for office right now, I'd vote for him, too. he's a very charismatic guy.
Justin, and a lot of other people, yeah.
Yeah, Justin, thanks so much for sharing with us the great work you're doing. And we'll encourage our listeners to head over to generationengage.org and check it out. Justin Rockefeller, great talking with you today.
Thanks and be well.
Thank you. You too. 866-303-2270 is our telephone number, toll-free all across the United States. And let's check in some of your thoughts on what happened, and what's going on here. Pat in Burbank,
hey.
California. Hey, Pat.
Hello. I watched Joe Biden talk, and part of it, not all of it. And he talked about sending humanitarian aid to Georgia. But the question I have for you and your listeners is, did he mention about not sending war aid ahead of time, such as the guns and bullets that were used?
No, in that moment, when he talked about that, I got it that the Democrats have made the political calculation that because the media has portrayed Russia as the aggressors, and because the McCain camp and the Republicans are going to play the Russia is the bad guy card here, and because most Americans just aren't sufficiently informed, frankly, to know that Georgia dropped the bombs on South Ossetia first, that they're just going to jump on board. And Georgia is a democracy, so there's something to be said for that. And Russia is becoming more belligerent, but politically it was very, very smart. Long term, strategically, I am very hopeful that we have Biden and Obama as vice president and president, because I know that they will use diplomacy before they encourage dropping bombs on cities again, as apparently, in my mind, Saakashvili was encouraged to do by Karl Rove and Randy Shuneman.
You see, the thing that I'm concerned about, Tom, are you there?
Yeah.
Is that all the meddling that we accuse Russia of doing in sovereign nations, we do when we send guns and war equipment and war training people over to these nations ahead of time.
Yeah.
We are meddling in sovereign affairs, and we're as much a hypocrite as all the other warmongering people that we like to point fingers at and accuse of being bad.
Pat Eisenhower was absolutely right. We have the military-industrial complex here. It has become a power and a force unto itself, in many cases, I think, stronger than government, and one that everybody is afraid to take on. And spot on. Thanks a lot for the call, Pat. Timmy in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Timmy.
Hey, Tom. I just want to let you know, CNN just reporting on Russia came out, made a statement that this war with Georgia was created by the Republican Party, Bush, that started this thing to try to help John McCain, and that they, I guess, have evidence that U.S. personnel was helping his attack against Zepia.
That's interesting. I reported on this show. How long has it been? About 2 weeks now since that happened? I mean, the day that it happened, or the day after it happened, I reported on this show of the associations between Saakashvili and basically McCain, through Randy Shuneman, but also that Pravda and many of the Russian media were reporting that this was an attempt by the administration to help the McCain candidacy. That's fascinating that CNN has actually picked it up. I'll need to track that one down a little more. Thanks a lot for the call, Timmy. I appreciate it. Caleb in Portland. Hey, Caleb.
Hey, good morning, Tom. I absolutely agree with you. I think we need a litany of some of the terrible things that this administration has done to the country. And I sure as heck wish the Democrats had done it. Such things as perversion of the justice system, exporting torture and importing just terrible practices from other countries, paying off oil, ignoring global warming. It's just one after the other. The destroying the Valerie Plame and our rights and so on. I mean, just these people have done terrible, terrible, terrible things, and little pats on the wrist will not do it when we really have to tell the American people what is going on with this administration.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And one of the things, I think there's been just a little bit too much kumbaya here.
Yeah, I agree. And I love kumbaya. I love kumbaya.
No, it's, and it plays really well with the folks in the stands, but, we need to go a step beyond
just
that.
Just one after the other, just a hard, maybe not them all because it'd take all night long, but just maybe the top 15, one after the other, and say, gee, do you really want this to continue?
I would love, thank you, Caleb. I would love it if somebody would get, if one of the speakers here, not in prime time, it's only going to be seen by C-SPAN, but I guarantee you, it'll get on YouTube and it'll go viral. If one of them got up and just read, the 35 indictments against Bush for impeachment, they don't even have to use the word impeachment. I mean, we'll give that to the DNC. Just get up and read the list of the crimes of this administration, the high crimes and misdemeanors, the impeachable offenses. Let's, it could be, it could have been Dennis Kucinich. Dennis did a great job. He gave a great speech. But there was that one line in his speech where he said, these guys don't deserve 5 to 4 more years or 8 more years. When they get out of office, they deserve 10 to 20. And I'm paraphrasing. That's not exactly how he said it. He was actually more eloquent than that. But, they asked him to take it out. And I think that was a terrible mistake. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
Broadcasting live coast to coast from Denver. We're over at Mile High Stadium, Invesco Field at Mile High, or Invesco Stadium at Mile High. And Congressman Keith Ellison, the congressman from Minnesota, Minnesota's 5th District, a friend of the show, been on many times. KeithEllison.org, by the way, his website. Congressman, welcome.
Hey, Tom. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, everything's going good, man. I mean, it's a historic day. It's the anniversary of the murder of Emmett Till. It's also the day of the King I Have a Dream speech. And again, it's going to be the night of the Barack Obama speech. So tonight is really pregnant with a lot of possibility. And, I just think that this should fire the engines of every true activist out there to say, we can really turn this thing around if we get engaged, get involved.
Congressman, sometimes it almost seems like I don't know if somebody who's into astrology would say the stars are aligning, or somebody who's into spirituality would say, it's just, you remember a couple of weeks ago, the Family Research Council, one of these right-wing groups, was trying to organize everybody to pray for rain in Denver when Obama spoke. And, of course, not only is it not raining here, but it looks like there's going to be a hurricane hitting land during the Republican National Convention, probably right around New Orleans, and God forbid anybody should be hurt down there, but just the irony of the whole thing is just so amazing. And the, your point about, today is the day Emmett Till was murdered. It's the day that Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech. Barack Obama is formally received the nomination, but tonight is his big speech. And it seems to me like everything is coming together. It's almost like the force of the universe or God or something. We're gonna.
It is a spiritual moment. It's a time for people to reflect a little bit. I mean, you know what, Tom? You and I, we're activists. We're always trying to push our country to be better. We want our country to live up to its ideals. But we sometimes in the progressive community spend a lot of time talking about where we haven't lived up to our ideals. Let's just say, there are some victories that we have achieved. We defeated Jim Crow. We passed the Wagner Act for workers. We passed the 19th Amendment for women to vote. These are the kind, everything good about America is something that progressives have done. We have risk life, limb, and everything to make America live up to its true creed. But we have made tremendous strides. Tonight is one of those markers where progressives can stand up and say, you know what, we've made our mark, and the best things about this country are what people like us have done. From the abolitionists against slavery to the suffragettes to right now, today, on this campaign.
Right. And it all came out of the Democratic Party over the years. I can't think of a single thing, and I think I'm a fairly good amateur historian, a single thing that the Republican Party has brought us, at least since 1880. I mean, Lincoln, the Republican Party of Lincoln was a reform party, but it got taken over by the big railroads in the 1880s, and ever since then, it's just been the big corporate party, and basically all they've brought us is the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, well, they've also brought us enormous deficits and national debt. They've also brought us a housing foreclosure crisis. Not to mention it was Herbert Hoover, who was a Republican president, who helped bring usher in the Great Depression.
So, Tom,
they've if you count bad luck, they have brought a form of luck to us.
Yeah, it really is startling. I've been doing a lot of channel surfing on a lot of, trying to find out what the commentators are saying. And Hannity, for example, has been pounded on this thing of, give me one good reason why Barack Obama should be president. One thing he's done, blah, blah, blah. He's not the youngest guy to be running for president. In fact, Teddy Roosevelt was 42. This, again, Carl Wolfson, our morning host, is just a fount of information and gave me this. Teddy Roosevelt was 42. JFK was 43. Bill Clinton was 46. Barack Obama's 47. He's been in office in both the state of Illinois and the United States Senate longer than was Bill Clinton, longer than was George Bush. He's got, I believe perhaps longer than Ronald Reagan. But I think the main quality that he has, and I was surprised, watching Hannity last night just, lash into Democrat after Democrat after Democrat with the same question, why should this guy be president, is he has leadership skills. Arguably, Reagan had leadership skills, Jack Kennedy had leadership skills, Bill Clinton had leadership. This is powerful stuff, to be able to bring people together and bring the world together. He can do that. So, and I know you're a great leader in Minnesota as well, so.
Yeah, well, you're a great leader too, Tom. I mean, the fact is, if you put Tom Hartman together with, Ed Schultz, together with, Bill Press, together with, Rachel Maddow and many others, you guys, together with the bloggers, are really helping to create a conversation that values the progressive values that have made our country great. And I can't stress enough that without a fourth estate, a media community that is creating space for political leaders to introduce bills and ideas and legislation, nobody even knows about what we're talking about, and we don't win.
Yeah. Congressman Keith Ellison from Minnesota's 5th District, keithellison.org, his website. Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
You got it, buddy. Take care.
And thank you for your kind words. And speaking to the media, Paul Waldman and Carl Frisch from Media Matters for America will be with us right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Tom Hartman here with you. Carl Frisch, Communications Director, and Paul Waldman, Senior Fellow at Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org, the website, are sitting right here with me in the old Mile High Stadium. Actually, I guess the old Mile High Stadium got torn down in Vesco Field at Mile High. It's like Pepsi Center yesterday. The whole corporate takeover of everything, I don't want to say corporate names.
Can you call me Coca-Cola for the rest of the
time? There you go. Carl Frisch, Coca-Cola is with us. So, Carl, Paul, let me start with you, Paul. Your thoughts on you guys make a living of observing the media, and the media has certainly been, front and center here. What do you think of the media coverage so far of this convention?
Well, I think the media coverage so far has lived down to expectations. It has been absolutely obsessed with this storyline of trying to find people who are Hillary supporters who won't support Obama. I think there may have only been about a half dozen of them, but somehow they all got interviewed on television 100 times, and there were people poring over Hillary Clinton's speech to see how many times she used the word I and how many times she used the word Obama, and trying to find that disunity. I think that you can't really write that story anymore. I don't see how. But now what we're seeing is that, you know, the McCain campaign has actually done a pretty good job. They've been releasing a new attack ad against Obama at least once a day as this this convention.
And they just release them onto the web where it gets picked up by the news media, or do they drop them into, like, you know, some little local cable network
I think it's a little of both. I mean, the strategy in either case is directed at the press. What they want them to do is for CNN and MSNBC and Fox to play them for free over and over. And what they know, the McCain campaign obviously understands very well, is that the more personal the ad is, the more harsh the attack, the more likely it will be to get played on the those cable nets. If they put out a positive ad about why John McCain's a nice guy, the cable nets are not going to play that. They'll play the harsh negative ones, and so they've been doing that every day. And it does seem as though there's almost no criticism of Obama that's too stupid for the cable networks to pick up. You know, whether it's Britney Spears or whatever, the more infantile
Britney Spears, the connection is her the set designer who does her sets designed this set here. Is that the...
Right.
Did I get that right?
That's what came out today, and they're gleefully pushing that. I don't know how many...
That means he's a good set designer.
Yeah, I don't know how many people there are who do set designs of this magnitude that you need for a stadium. There probably aren't that many.
Not more than a half a dozen of them in the world, I'd guess. You know?
But somehow that's supposed to tell us something about Barack Obama, I guess. And it's one of those things that, again, is so juvenile and ridiculous that it's just...
He was,
like
supposed to go out and say, okay, I want the set designer for the NRA. Oh, wait a minute. They don't do stadium events, do they? Mick Jagger? No, that's another rock star. I mean, who does stadium events, by and large, other than, you know, I mean, Jack Kennedy did in 1960 in the Coliseum in Los Angeles. And Barack Obama here, that's about it.
McCain had literally dozens of people, though, at his events. Literally dozens. So I can understand his jealousy.
Literally dozens,
I don't understand his obsession with these teen pop stars is what I don't understand. And,
Right.
They are obsessed with the most inane attacks that they can possibly make.
And what's amazing is that the potentially inane attacks on McCain are not getting picked up. One of the commentators was talking about the lack of military service of Barack Obama. Nobody is talking about how Cheney got 5 deferments,
right?
You know, or George Bush went AWOL for a year, which, by the way, during time of war is called treason. You know, it just blows my mind.
And that's another interesting thing about the coverage too, is that I have heard a lot of sort of criticisms among Democrats saying, well, you know, they're not attacking McCain strongly enough. But the problem isn't that they're not attacking McCain. The problem is that the people who have been attacking him aren't getting shown on television. I mean, for instance, right. John Kerry last night gave what I wasn't in the hall at the time. I was watching on TV, and so I didn't see it. But people were emailing me from in the hall saying, this is an extraordinary speech.
This was the speech he should have given 4 years ago.
Exactly. And he's tearing McCain to pieces. But I think MSNBC showed parts of it, but the other cable networks didn't. So there have been a lot of people from the podium giving blistering critiques of John McCain, but they're just not getting on television.
And, you know, if a Democrat attacks in the woods, are they going to be heard by anybody?
Yeah. Well said, Carl.
You know, one of the big things we talked, you know, all this week about Democratic unity and is there a rift still between Hillary and Obama? And you talk about the attacks not being picked up by the media against McCain. You've got the exact same stories that could be picked up about McCain. A poll came out on Monday from CNN that said to Republican voters, would you like John McCain as your nominee or would you like someone else? And someone else got 42%. You want to talk about a unity problem.
Yeah.
It's in the Republican Party.
And that's Carl Frisch you were just hearing. We're talking with Carl Frisch and Paul Waldman, two of the good guys, head honchos, chief cooks and bottle washers over at Media Matters, mediamatters.org. And do you guys want to pick up some of our listeners? Let's bring some callers in on this. And,
sure.
Unless there's something that's just burning on the top of your mind here that's... Because I think the whole interaction here thing would be great. Henry in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hey, Henry, you're on the air.
I'm doing fine. I hope you all are having a good day out there.
We are, and I hope the hurricane doesn't cause you any harm there, Henry.
Well, so far it's looking good, but who knows?
Yeah.
So what's look that? Here. I'm not really a person for a lot of emotions or things of that nature, but I tell you, what Hillary done yesterday showed a lot of class. A lot of class. And you know, a lot of people didn't understand why she stopped her right there, because I feel like it came down to that statement where they felt like it needed to stop, and she stopped it.
Yeah.
And when Bill came on, and then John Kerry, and all of them got, I mean, it was an electrifying moment. But me being an African-American male, I have to truly say it was a really emotional day yesterday. Truthfully, I didn't think I'd kind of choke up like that or anything like that, but it just kind of came over me, you know?
Yeah, but what are your thoughts on the coverage here, Henry?
Well, I thought the coverage was so-so until every now and then, you know, they kept breaking in. And you know, and they get bits and pieces. So I was lucky. I was listening to it on Sirius, and I just had it on the television.
Ah, interesting.
So I kind of lucked out on that, because I knew from the night before they kept cutting in and out and talking about what somebody else or what some analyst thought about. I don't want to hear what the analyst thought about. I want to hear what the speaker got to say.
Right. So you were multimediaing. Henry, thanks a lot for the call and for your comments. Anything you guys want to say about this, or pick up
a
light
bulb? I think his experience is probably similar to a lot of people. Fox News, on the night of the Democratic keynote speech, aired 2 minutes of the Democratic keynote speech and went right into a political discussion about Willie Ayers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Who's like, so yesterday's news. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jim, you're on the air.
Yeah, Tom, I'm a little disappointed. I've seen most of the speeches, but I don't understand why they aren't talking about the FISA, going around FISA, the national security letters, the 3% of the Patriot Act that's unconstitutional, and the fact that you and I and everybody else right now have no Fourth Amendment rights in this country. And these are egregious abuses of power and against our Constitution.
Not to mention the end of posse comitatus, which is using the military against our own people. And the end of habeas corpus, which is the ability to contest your confinement. Jim.
The only thing that Bill Clinton said was he is going to protect and defend the Constitution. But that should have been elaborated on.
I absolutely agree. Jim, thank you very much for the call. Paul Waldman, your thoughts on this line of...
Well... It's true. I mean, you know, you've heard the expression defining deviancy down. The Bush administration has kind of defined tyranny down in some ways. And we've gotten so used to those things.
It's like the banality of evil.
Exactly. Yeah. The affronts to the Constitution have been so frequent that it almost doesn't raise any eyebrows anymore. And in the context of a presidential campaign, you know, obviously McCain isn't going to want to talk about those things. Mm-hmm. And Obama probably isn't going to want to either. I've seen him be asked that question, and he will say, you know, I taught constitutional law, and he'll give a very eloquent critique of what the Bush administration has done. But then when you get into context like a convention, well, it's all about the big thematics and not kind of delving down into an issue that's necessarily kind of arcane for a lot of people and difficult for many people to understand. As important as it is, it's something that's not going to be painted in those broad brushstrokes.
Although I think a lot of these things could be reduced to sound bites if the Democrats just sat down and, you know, if they had a good messaging person, if they had their own Karl Rove or their own, what's his name, the guy, the NLP expert who used to do all the you know, people metering stuff. And
Frank Luntz?
Yeah, Frank Luntz, thank you. we're all sleep deprived.
It's also
here.
An issue that, you know, came up so little in the primary from the media.
Yeah.
We looked at the debates over the course of last year, and that issue did not come up in a single debate.
It's amazing.
Not a single question about the powers and privileges of the presidency and whether those would be stripped back to where they were before the Bush administration.
Right. We have just a minute here before the break. Rob in Minnesota, quick comment.
I got to say, Sirius 113, guys, they had the best coverage. But the whole thing is that there's a lot of people in America that have a certain frame of thought. And, Tom, you love satire, and Mel Brooks does satire, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, the whole thing is there's a lot of people in America. You remember when a new sheriff came into town, the way they reacted?
In Blazing Saddles, yeah.
You got it. That's all I wanted to say. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Take that into consideration.
Yeah. Well, that was a racist reaction in that movie, basically. And, a lot of people are very concerned about that. We had Elijah Cummings on the show yesterday, and he was talking about how, you know, this is a historic moment, and whatever the polls show, knock 5% off for the racist vote that won't tell the pollsters he believes in the Bradley effect. What do you guys think?
Well,
Paul Waldman?
I think that in terms of the pollsters, it may be That may be a little bit of thing of the past. I think we're not quite sure how it plays out with Obama in particular.
Do you think that they're actually recalibrating the polls? Like, you know, maybe Obama's actually polling at 50% and they're dropping at 4% because they're assuming that there's white racists who won't say anything?
I doubt it, but I think it's unknown territory.
Yeah, it'd be a good question to ask John Zogby or, you know, one of the folks at Reuters or whoever's doing the polls. Paul Waldman, Senior Fellow, Carl Frisch, Communications Director, Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org. Thanks, guys, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. We'll be back with your calls right after this, 45 minutes past the hour on the Tom Harping Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
No surplus, now it's gone. All the debt grows every day. Yes, the balance of our loans is bigger than Star Jones. Tell the kids they'll have to pay. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I wish this debt would go away. Could try to pay these bills, or sell Dick Cheney's pills, or put Congress on eBay. And we owe
so much. $10 trillion in debt, brought to you courtesy of Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., and George Bush Jr. Bill Clinton actually got us net positive for a couple of years. And it's just absolutely amazing. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Jan Schakowsky is on the line with us, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. She represents the 9th District of Illinois. She is Vice Chair of the Subcommittee on Commerce, Trade, and Consumer Protection, the Subcommittee on Health, and also serves on the Subcommittee. Oh, I've got a whole long list here for you, Congresswoman. But your passion has been health care, as I recall. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much. I'm always glad to be with you, Tom. I also am on the Intelligence Committee.
That's right.
That may not be the right word for what's going on, but
yeah.
Intelligence, yeah.
Well, vis-a-vis the Intelligence Committee, what's your take on the, you know, yesterday the Los Angeles Times was reporting, and I thought this was maybe spooky, if nothing else, the headline was, why was Cheney's guy in Georgia before the war? What was a top national security aide to Vice President Dick Cheney doing in Georgia shortly before Mikhail Saakashvili's troops engaged in what became a disastrous fight with South Ossetian rebels? And I'm reading from the LA Times.
Yeah, yeah.
And Randy Shuneman, $800,000. He's McCain's top foreign policy advisor. Karl Rove, 3 weeks earlier, is in Yalta with Mikhail Saakashvili. Is it even conceivable that the Republicans would use foreign policy to advance a political agenda? I would submit that that's what they did in 2002, with ginning up for the war in Iraq.
Oh, there's no question about it. In fact, Andy Card said, well, what was it, that comment that he made about you don't do something like this in August, you have to wait till September because it's better for the campaign. So I certainly don't doubt that. But, you know, as a member of the Intelligence Committee, you would think I might have some inside information, but what I have found, this is my first term on, Nancy Pelosi put me on when we took the majority, is that they hate us. The administration hates the oversight committees. They tell us as little as possible. Often we find out on CNN or, you know, in the newspaper, about what we should have been briefed on long ago. Sometimes we find months or even years later after it's already happened. So it's a really frustrating position to be in with this administration that's so secretive.
Yeah, they really don't believe in oversight and in the balance of powers and in the nation that our founders created, in my opinion. Fundamentally
worse than that, they think they can do anything. I mean, anything. Yeah. And
they may well have.
They do, yeah.
they have done just right off the edge. Congressman Schakowsky, I'm assuming you're here in Denver. I'm in Denver.
Here. I'm one of the national co-chairs of the Obama campaign and have been close to Barack now for 12 years. So, Yeah, I'm very excited.
That's great. So, your thoughts on what has gone on so far, how the media has been covering it, how the delegates on the floor are responding. You know, what's your broad overview here of what's going on?
Well, you know, someone who's been to lots and lots of conventions. Of course, this is the most meaningful for me because Barack is a dear friend. But I, talking to other delegates, there is a special kind of enthusiasm right now that I haven't really felt, and they haven't either in past conventions. Every convention there's a goal, and there are several goals, and I think that we so far have successfully achieved them. Certainly the goal of unity, and I thought that the Clintons did a great job in showing that the party is in fact unified and has to be. In introducing Joe Biden, I thought, you know, I learned things about Joe that I didn't really know, and more on the personal side, and I thought it was very effective. I have every confidence that Barack tonight is going to make a historic speech, one that, you know, will perhaps rank up with some that Franklin Roosevelt or John Kennedy made.
Yeah, it's, you know, last night I got back to the hotel, and in the lounge in the public area they were running Fox, and and Sean Hannity was just, you know, Democrat after Democrat. I don't even want to name who he had, but he had two or three Democrats in a row, and each one of them, he said, tell me why Barack Obama should be president. Just give me one thing he's done. Give me one, you know. And they would kind of stumble around. Well, you know, he worked with Dick Lugar on this. Well, he, you know. But really, isn't the bottom line that, you know, Barack Obama has as much experience, as much legislative experience as probably most of our presidents. He's older. Teddy Roosevelt was only 42 when he became president. JFK was only 43.
Bill Clinton reminded us last night that he was accused of the same things
as
Barack
exactly.
Obama.
But
more policy experience and too young.
Yeah, exactly. But and which I think both of those are a straw man. But isn't really the bottom line that this man has leadership ability? He's like John Kennedy, and we need a leader in the United States now, somebody who can pull people together and somebody who can pull the world together, which we saw in Germany. The whole world is ready to embrace him.
Exactly. When Barack Obama takes the oath of office, the whole narrative about the United States of America will change at home and around the world. And those flags that were waved in Germany. When have we seen that? We've got a president now. Well, actually, we did see it with Bill Clinton. I traveled with him to India, where a billion people were so enthusiastic about him. But since George Bush, he's had to fly into places at night in order not to meet the demonstrators that would be waiting for him.
Yeah, in the UK, they cordoned off like 40 city blocks or something, you know, when he was in London. I mean, it's just incredible. We've got a president who is universally hated around the world, or disliked, or, you know, whatever the appropriate word is, and Barack Obama will be, I believe, beloved.
And yeah, I was in Paris for a summit.
Yeah, you can finish your sentence.
Okay, and I asked French people, I said, you know, who are you for president? They would say, Barack Obama, of course.
Yeah, there you go. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from Illinois' 9th District, janschakowsky.org is her campaign website. Thanks so much for being with us, Congresswoman.
Thank you. You do a great job, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you so much. 57 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. From the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
6 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Fair and slightly unbalanced, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Let's just check. Congressman Kucinich, I believe, is going to be with us in just a minute. But let's first hear what Bill Clinton had to say last night.
16 years ago, you gave me the profound honor to lead our party to victory and to lead our nation to a new era of peace and broadly shared prosperity. Together, we prevailed in a hard campaign in which the Republicans said I was too young and too inexperienced to be commander-in-chief.
And, you know, this is the charge that they're making again. He was 46 years old when he was sworn in, a year younger than Barack Obama. By the way, John McCain apparently doesn't speak for John McCain, or John McCain's campaign doesn't speak for John McCain. McCain's camp is now saying that he has made his decision. In fact, they announced it to the press yesterday. McCain today said, no, he hasn't made his decision. So, so once again, John McCain's campaign does not speak for John McCain. Joe Biden. Joe Biden's speech last night, I actually had tears in my eyes. It was amazing. Here's a couple of clips from Joe Biden's speech last night.
Since I've never been called a man of few words, let me say it as simply as I can. Yes, yes, I accept your nomination to run and serve with Barack Obama, the next president of the United States of America.
Said. And we have another clip here, too, on Biden, Chris, I believe.
I profoundly disagree with the direction John wants to take this country from Afghanistan to Iraq, from Amtrak to veterans. You know, John thinks that during the Bush years, quote, we've made great economic progress. I think it's been abysmal. And in the Senate, John has voted with President Bush 95%, and that is very hard to believe. And when John McCain proposes $200 million in new taxes for corporate America, $1 billion alone for the largest companies in the nation, but no relief for 100 million American families, that's not change. That's more of the same.
That was also probably Joe Biden's only stumble last night, where he said new taxes, and he meant new tax breaks. But I think everybody in the audience figured it out. Everybody, you know, knew it, got it, and, you know, it was enough. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Mike in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hello. Are we at war right now? Because they're saying on the BBC that one of our spy plane is shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So are we gonna deploy or what? Do we have any more people to deploy?
Yeah, we're our combat forces are definitely badly stretched, and but you know, having a spy plane shot down is probably not going to be considered an act of war. I'm gonna check the news services in here and see what I can find out about that. But thank you, Mike, for the call and for the heads up on that. You know, it's so much going on in the world right now, and here we are in this this convention center. It's almost like a little bubble. Nancy in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I was really thrilled to hear you talking to the fellow from Media Matters earlier, because last night my husband and I were both just shocked and amazed. We are very big Keith Olbermann fans and Rachel Maddow, and we usually watch MSNBC, but we watched on C-SPAN, and there were phenomenal people on there giving speeches that were not even being played on CNN, MSNBC, anywhere.
Yeah, I know.
And it was retired military people, the first female three-star general, a Patrick Murphy representative from Pennsylvania, who has served in Iraq, and they were all talking about the failed policies of the Bush administration, McCain taking us down that same path again. It was all the red meat that we flipped over to MSNBC and CNN and actually heard, you know, like, for example, Pat Buchanan ranting that the Democrats have squandered this convention by not talking about all of this, and yet they're not showing any of it.
Yeah.
And it's of great concern to me that the mainstream media, which I think most of the Americans are watching, and some of the cable channels that most of the Americans are watching, have chosen to not telecast any of these phenomenal speeches.
Right. Let's call it, first of all, Nancy, let's call it the corporate media rather than the mainstream
exactly.
media, because there's not much
exactly.
mainstream about it. It is the corporate media.
Exactly.
And secondly, yes, spot on. And let's keep in mind, the reason why they're doing this is because, you know, they want to make money, and
right.
they want to feature their own stars. And even when their stars are our stars, you know, there's still this business proposition about it, and that's the direction that they're going to go. And so,
exactly.
you know, increasingly
well,
a lot
well, the cable channels are squandering the opportunity.
going to move along, as they say. Congressman Dennis Kucinich of Ohio. Congressman Kucinich, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure.
Congressman?
Thanks.
Let me put him on the other side of the board. Maybe we can hear him then. Congressman?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I'm not hearing him, Chris, if you're hearing him.
Tommy's on the Comrex, if you can hear me.
Did we
Hello?
Lose our SDN connection? I'm...
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
Democratic Party is standing with Barack Obama right now, notwithstanding the bizarre coverage by the corporate media over the last few weeks and months. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jefferson Smith is sitting with me. He will soon be a member of the House of Representatives in the state of Oregon. He's the leader of the Bus Project, the founder of the Bus Project. And Jeff, I'd like you to give a quick plug on the Bus Project, and then I got a whole bunch of callers here who've got a lot of great questions. You're a delegate. You're an Obama delegate. You've been on the floor. You've been here through all these gigs.
Yep.
First of all, let me just welcome you.
Oh, man, great to be here. Love the show, obviously.
Great to have you. And Jeff is a regular on our local show on AM 620 KPOJ as well. And then let's just get it in with up with some of our callers.
Terrific. Yeah, I'll give a quick plug, but obviously the callers are more important than me. The Bus Project is a vehicle for hands-on democracy. Work primarily in Oregon. Started a federation of five states, getting young people particularly involved in democracy. Get on a bus, go around the state, engage people in the process, do some fun stuff like do it coming up this Halloween, trick or vote, a mass Halloween canvas. That's a little bit. We can go to the callers or you can ask more.
Yeah, well, trick or vote, is it just in Oregon? Or is it,
that's going to be 25 cities across the country. We've gotten 15 organizational partners, 25 cities and counting. We're going to knock on over 100,000 doors in a single day around time of Halloween, in costume, fun. The data says knocking on doors is the way to increase voter turnout, one-on-one contact. What's the one cultural tradition every year that involves knocking on doors? Halloween. That comes up always just a few days before the election. So we might be too old to trick or treat, but you're never too old to trick or vote.
There you go.
And
there you go. That was Jefferson McCain and Jefferson Smith talking with me. You can tell how much sleep I've had this week. Jefferson Smith talking with me yesterday at here on the program. The phone lines. I mean, they're running all these phone lines into here all of a sudden, and things just don't always work out the way they do. And Dennis Kucinich had to move along. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Jenna in San Pedro. Hey, Jenna.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I just wanted to mention the speech by John Kerry, how impressed I was. I was glad to finally hear your previous guest mention that because it's about the first time I've heard it brought up. And he gave a great speech. He spoke of the pathetic, insulting, and desperate tactics and the myth of the maverick and just really socked it to McCain and the Swift voters and everybody else, and it was great. And I also wanted to call attention to something that struck me, how Joe Biden's son was so modest about the fact that he is going to be shipping out shortly, and compare that to McCain's noun verb POW every time we hear from the guy, which is, to me, pretty insulting. And yes, I agree with one of your last callers who made mention of the fact that there were so many retired military personnel of every rank who got up and spoke vehemently about the failure on the part of John McCain to support them and how Barack Obama has been doing just the opposite.
Yeah, it's absolutely. And this is a speech that really should have been carried by the national networks and really should have been in prime time. Thank you, Jana. I appreciate your thoughts on it. Britton in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Britton, what's up?
Hey, Tom. It's an honor to speak with you. I just have a general comment for any maybe Democratic strategist who might be listening or anyone who wants to talk about how John McCain likes to talk about his war record and the Hanoi Hilton and all that stuff. It's kind of a rebuttal. And it's, as I understand it, a man is not defined by the hardships he endures, but by how he bounces back, you know, the actions he takes in coming back from those hardships, and just look at, you know, all, how he's voted on things, and, you know, that's basically my comment.
Yeah, and Joe Biden certainly is a man who has you know, been to hell and back, and in his personal life. I mean, losing your wife and your daughter, and having your two sons horribly injured has to be just a horrific thing. So, 866-303-2270, Clark in Thousand Oaks, California. Hey, Clark.
Hello, Tom. I've been listening for 2 years, and I've learned a lot from your show.
Well, thank you, Clark.
I thought the convention was wonderful. It was an all-star show, especially watching C-SPAN and all of their coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm distressed that there are still so many people that can support the Republicans after all the terrible things, sometimes criminal things, dirty tricks that they have been pulling in the last 8 years. The only thing I can figure that people would want to vote McCain is, if they're a hardline Republican, they always come up with a line, oh, they'll tax and spend. They'll tax, they'll take away their money. And the other thing that seems to me as a drawback, I think there is still a certain amount of racism. People just don't want somebody different like Obama.
Yeah. The racism factor, you know, our conversation with Elijah Cummings yesterday, I thought was illuminating in that regard. And I think that most of America, and particularly the young people in America, which is the largest and most, you know, rapidly growing cohort, that's just not an issue for them. But your other points are very well taken, Clark. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Daniel, I don't see a city for you. I'm sorry. Where are you?
Seattle.
Oh, Seattle. Hey, Daniel. What's on your mind?
Well, I like the other callers. I finally gave in and started watching C-SPAN because they were the only ones that are actually covering the real convention. John Stewart from The Daily Show made a comment the other night that the coverage by the mainstream media is kind of like a gerbil wheel. And I thought that was pretty funny and also a good observation. I mean, they just are obsessed with the inane and often miss the point of everything or are involved in some kind of conversation that really has no relevance to the state of the nation when we're dying out here and we're involved in two wars. Like you say, the corporate media. The other thing I'd like your feedback on, Tom, I don't know if you've seen it, but CNN's coverage after the convention involves the Larry King show, where he has three or four Republicans, pundits or politicians or whatever, sort of dismantling the Democratic, what's been done that night at the convention. And it's just completely unfair. I mean, there's no counterpoint. Larry King is not very good at, you know, putting these people on the spot when they just make outlandish or fabricated claims.
Well, he doesn't call them on things. He's used to interviewing celebrities. I mean, Larry McCain is not a political... I'm doing that with everybody today. Larry King is not a particularly astute political observer or commentator, and so, you know, basically he throws softballs at people. But that's what he does. I think he should probably stick to celebrities and not try to interview politicians. Daniel?
The whole idea of just having this, you know, a show where you just have Republicans, and, you know, talking about what just happened at the convention, I think is flawed, you know, because they get away with murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well said, Daniel. Yeah. And they are getting away with murder. The murder of a million Iraqis. Just right across the board, just, you know, god awful things. Cheryl in Washington. Hey, Cheryl. We have
hi,
a minute
Tom.
Here to break.
I'm nervous, so excuse me. I have two subjects. First of all, I've heard the rumors of Karl Rove calling Lieberman and asking him to drop out of his consideration for VP. And
Lieberman laughed at him and said, no way.
Well, I don't know. I just wondered if it's true. And also, across the wire...
Nobody knows if it's true. It's just
Putin suggesting that, or saying they have proof that the U.S. was instrumental in this invasion in Georgia, which was before was... And this is another dirty tactic by the administration. I mean, and the taxpayers are footing the bill to reconstruct all... It just never ends, does it?
No, it doesn't. Especially when the Republicans are in charge. Cheryl, this is why we need to have, and thank you so much for the call, this is why we need to have Democrats in office, and not just Democrats, progressive Democrats, people who actually are not in the pockets of AT&T, who are not in the pockets of McDonnell Douglas and Boeing and the big defense contractors, General Electric and whatnot, people who are here for we the people. We need more Russ Feingolds in the Senate. More Dennis Kucinich's in the House.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Another song from GW, that's me, and the Carlisle Group. Here we go, get real close. Strangers in the night, exchanging gunfire, liberals so uptight, call me a liar, challenging my war, before my term is through. Something in their eyes is getting scary. Keeping to my plan is getting hairy. Every day it's hard to do the things I do.
Oh, George, you sing so badly.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Talking with an echo in my ear. And Congressman Jay Inslee is on the line with us, the congressman for the 1st District of the great state of Washington. Congressman Inslee, welcome to Air America. Great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for letting me join you.
Thank you for coming on. First of all, your reaction to Senator Biden's and President Clinton's speeches last night.
I think it's been like a lot of the rest of the convention, which is it's been pitch perfect and quite compelling. You know, I've been around the bend a few times. I've been in public office since 1988. I've listened to 10,000 political speeches, and so you'd think you could be jaundiced to this. But I got to tell you, I have been moved by a lot of the things I've heard down here, including Bill Clinton last night, when he said we need to lead by the power of our example rather than the example of our power, I thought that captured the sentiment of the Obama campaign and maybe could be a slogan for how we should be thinking about our foreign policy. And so, a lot of people really moved down here, too. This is a group I've never seen so unified and so motivated. And, you know, there are a lot of tears in the hall, too, to think, 40 years after Martin Luther King's speech, today we'll be accepting the acceptance speech of a guy who, is really going to be living the dream.
It's also the anniversary of the murder of Emmett Till.
The arc, as they said, as Martin Luther King said, and Obama quotes frequently, the arc of history is long and tough, but, forward.
Yeah, it is.
So I think this is a big day for the country, and not just Democrats. I hope, and I think, I actually do believe, Republicans are celebrating this to a degree, too. We need more of them to vote for our guy, and then we're going to really move this country forward.
Congressman Inslee, if I may lobby you on the air for a moment, the House of Representatives as a whole has not voted on the resolution to hold Karl Rove in contempt of Congress for refusing to come before Congressman Conyers' Judiciary Committee. And, you know, I realize that there's an attempt by the leadership not to get into contentious things, and they don't want it to look like the Clinton impeachment hearings, blah, blah. But a vote to hold him in contempt will simply cause him to appeal it to a higher court. It'll still end up after November that anything serious gets done on it, but at least it would happen. And are you ready to vote for and to encourage the leadership to bring to a vote a contempt citation against Karl Rove?
I believe I am. I haven't thought about this until you just asked me about it. But, you know, this is an entirely appropriate and responsible thing for Congress to do. Our oversight responsibility is profoundly important. And I don't believe that, frankly, this for any strategic or tactical reason would be unwise. I do believe it is our responsibility. Rove has been in contempt of not just Congress, but more importantly, the American people. And I do believe that there is an abundant evidence that he has been very close to the decision-making that has led to the politicization of the judicial process, which I think may be, if you look back at all of the terrible offenses to democracy that the Bush administration has been responsible for, I think the perversion of the justice system in the firing of the 9 attorney generals, in the hiring for political purposes, may be the most damaging to democracy, because the longer I'm in this business, the more I understand having a strong independent judiciary that doesn't play favors for parties is fundamental to the whole shebang. So, yeah, I think that is the right decision, and I think we've gone about it in a very responsible way. I don't think this has been, you know, any witch hunt at all. We've been very careful.
No, it's not. This is very, very... And this is basically just asking him to come speak.
The courts are going to rule, and the courts have ruled in our favor, rightfully so, and we won this big case, you know, 2 weeks ago, that the executive privilege did not allow them to simply ignore the subpoena. So, yeah, I think we should move forward.
Thank you. Thank you. And please, if you can encourage Jenny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi to bring this to the floor. This, I think, is really a truly important issue, and I'm not,
yeah.
This isn't on my part, you know, out for revenge. I'm very concerned that if we have basically advisors to the president in the White House breaking the law repeatedly, encouraging others to break the law, creating entire systems that break the law, this is just not a good thing for democracy, and we can't have future presidents doing this. Even Barack Obama, as a future president, should not be allowed to do this, assuming he's president. We need to just, you know, nail it down now.
Well, that's why this is a bipartisan issue. You know, power can corrupt both parties equally, you know, that's why everybody should get behind this. And the other thing is, the reason this is so important, and I always harken back to Justice William O. Douglas's quote about this, the reason you have to fight this inch by inch is that a loss of freedom does not come as a curtain coming down on a stage just suddenly. It comes as the twilight of the evening, you know, shade by shade until it's totally dark. And so you have to be very jealous and be eternally vigilant to not allow an erosion. You lose your liberties by a process of erosion, not sort of cataclysm. And that's why you have to be so diligent here.
Yeah, as Pastor Niemöller pointed out so many years ago, you know, first they came for the communists. And
Right.
Yep. You are on the 15-member Select Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming.
You bet.
And I'm curious what you think is going to be done if Barack Obama is president and if we have a Democratic House God willing, you know, a Democratic Senate that either has 60 members Democratic or we get Senate leadership that's willing to force Republicans to filibuster, you know, publicly and back them down the way that they always backed down Democrats. What will happen? What will come out of this?
Well, I'm optimistic with Barack Obama, who gets his heart and soul, that we have three compelling reasons to move for a clean energy future for the country. One is the security threat. Two is global warming, and three is the need to create job expansion in our country. And I think the planets will have aligned next January with Barack Obama at the top. You know, we do not have even months to lose on a clean energy future. This morning's newspaper, if you look at this morning's newspaper, the story is that the Arctic, basically the polar ice cap, has disappeared and will be totally gone in the summer months here in the next 3 or 5 years. That is a heat shield for the globe. It basically reflects a lot of energy back into space that will now be absorbed when it's gone for the summer months. This is a tipping point that ought to cause any thinking American with eighth grade science to understand the risk that we face. That is one of the reasons having a leader at the top of the free world who will bring to bear the full energies of the United States to really become the clean energy arsenal for the world, that's one of the reasons this is the most important election in my lifetime, certainly. And I am very confident in his ability to rally this country. And I'll tell you what, I know this metaphor to Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, has been used, but I think it is very apt, because when John F. Kennedy got up there on May 25th, 61, and said we're going to the moon in 10 years, that was an audacious, courageous thing, and it inspired a nation, and I was, 10 years old at the time, and I was inspired. So I think this is a person uniquely qualified to rally the country to the measures that we need, including a cap-and-trade system, a renewable energy portfolio, and a change of the system that gives subsidies to oil and gas, and in fact give them to the clean energy folks and consumers to buy energy-efficient vehicles. And that's the vote that really defined these two candidates. You know, Barack Obama stepped up to the plate, voted against the oil and gas industries to take away their subsidies and give it to Americans so they can have clean, efficient cars and equipment and new businesses. John McCain, for all his good characters, stayed in bed with the oil and gas guys and wouldn't come out of his office to go vote. And as a consequence, we were one vote short of breaking the filibuster led by the oil and gas industry. We got 59 votes. And John McCain was AWOL when his country needed him at that moment, when we were going to break the shackles of the oil and gas industry. So there is a profound difference between these two people, and that's why I'm going to give you all I've got for Barack Obama this year.
Amen. We're talking to Congressman Jay Inslee, the 1st District in Washington State. JayInslee.com, by the way, is his campaign website. We have about a minute left, Congressman. The war in Iraq, you voted against this. You've been an outspoken critic of it all along. It seems that the Republicans are basically, I think their strategy is going to be what the senator from Vermont long ago suggested to Lyndon Johnson, as I recall. Maybe it was Nixon. You know, why don't you just declare victory and go home? That's what they're going to do. Your thoughts on this politically?
Well, I got to tell you, I just don't like to think politically when you're talking about war. You know, these are kids sitting in foxholes or exposed, and I hate to think of this from a political lens. But
the Republicans are playing this politically, 100%.
McCain wants to say that I was the genius on the surge, so trust me. But to me, that's like the captain of the Titanic at the inquiry where they were going to take away his captain's license. He said, I rammed the ship into the iceberg. It sank. I lost the world's largest vessel. I was recklessly indifferent to the risk. I made a stupid decision and lost the ship. But, I really had this good lifeboat that I got these people in. That's his sort of surge mentality. When the chips were down for the big decision, Barack Obama, as Joseph Biden so aggressively said yesterday and accurately, Barack Obama has been right time after time on these foreign policy decisions. John McCain has been wrong time after time. It's an amazing string of failure. So we need a change, and I believe we're going to get one.
Yeah, John McCain, experience we don't need. It's Jay Inslee, jayinslee.com. Thanks, Congressman.
Thank you, sir. We'll get up.
You betcha. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
This is right at the top of their webpage over at CNN.com. It's the top stories. Dateline Sochi, Russia, as a couple of our callers have let us know about. But let me just give you the details here. Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin, and this isn't a guy who just, goes off on a wild rant. We're talking the number two guy, and probably in terms of power, the number one guy in the only nation in the world that has 7,000 nuclear weapons that they could point at us.
And one of the largest countries in the world, one of the most powerful countries in the world, Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin has accused the United States of orchestrating the conflict in Georgia to benefit one of its presidential election candidates. Now, I've been saying this from day one, that something stinks with Saakashvili dropping bombs in Svengali in South Ossetia in the middle of the night on, what I think it was August 7th that the thing started. And while Putin is along with Bush over there in China for the Olympics, but right after Cheney's guy was there, in fact, apparently Cheney's guy was there the day before, 3 weeks after Karl Rove was there, meeting with Saakashvili, and during the time that John McCain, senior policy advisor, had taken $800,000 from Saakashvili, Saakashvili decides he's going to drop bombs on South Ossetia, kill a bunch of civilians, start a war with Russia, figures somebody told him that, don't worry, Mikhail, this is going to work out just fine for you. Well, it didn't work out just fine for him, and a lot of people have died as a result of it, and John McCain has been trying to pump this thing for all he can. In an exclusive interview with CNN's Matthew Chance in the Black Sea of Sochi yesterday, Putin said the U.S. had encouraged Georgia to attack the autonomous region of South Ossetia. Putin told CNN his defense officials had told him it was done to benefit a presidential candidate. Putin went on to say, here's a quote from him, U.S. citizens were indeed in the area of conflict. They were acting in implementing those orders, doing as they were ordered. The only one who can give such orders is their leader. In other words, Putin is saying that we actually had people, whether they were troops or advisors or what, he hasn't been specific, he just says U.S. citizens, who were in the area of conflict, presumably South Ossetia, could just be Georgia. I would think probably more likely it was just Georgia. And they were acting and implementing those orders and doing as they were ordered. It's and then, you know, this comes on the heels of yesterday's piece in the Los Angeles Times under the headline, Why Was Cheney's Guy in Georgia Before the War? According to the president's office, we're not going to tell you. And the speculation is that Cheney's going to head over there, and so this was just his advance team. Right. His advance team goes the day before Saakashvili drops bombs on South Ossetia. And that was just the advance team. Yeah. Are we all conspiracy nuts here? I don't know. Bob in San Francisco. Hey, Bob, what's up?
I love that entree, because here's another one.
Okay.
The memo in the Susskind book, The Forgery, never mind what, if it's about Iraq, it was way too late to be about that, even though it sounds like it is. I think it was designed as prophylactic against inquiry into pre-9/11, which, after all, they've chosen the date of July 2001. Mm-hmm. And they had a yellow cake in there. It makes it sound like it's about Iraq, but it's mostly about the ties of al-Qaeda to Iraq and the U.S. You can't tell from this, because it was written by somebody that we never had until after the war started. No, before the war started, but after 9/11.
What's Habush, the this that you're talking about again? I'm sorry, Bob.
Habush, who is the alleged author of the forgery.
Oh, you're talking about the forged document that the Bush administration had that they trotted out after Joe Wilson called them out.
Yeah, as if it's about Iraq. It could easily be about 9/11. Two-thirds of it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It came out right after Condi Rice.
Yeah, Ron Susskind doesn't deal with that part of it, at least.
Couldn't.
Yeah. Bob, I'm I think it's entirely possible. Thank you for putting that point out there. And, David in San Francisco. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. Hey, before I went on about taxation with representation, what you were just talking about, what have you got for attribution on that I could look up real quick?
The Why Was Cheney's Guy in Georgia Before the War is over on the L.A. Times national page. If you go to L.A. Times, you go to their blogs, you go to Countdown to Crawford, there it is.
All right,
and,
good.
The Putin accuses, us, if you just go to CNN.com, it's the top story.
Hey, what I was interested in, you were talking to the congressman there about the White House secrecy and in refusing to allow us, the taxpayers, to learn how our money is being spent. So that's pure 1776 taxation without representation. We're having taxpayer-paid-for congressmen and senators have oversight how our money is being spent. And when they can't even learn how our money is being spent for top secrecy, you know, that's a subversion of our Constitution. And,
yeah, absolutely, and right. And this is what Jen Schakowsky was talking about.
Sure.
They don't even tell them what's going on.
Right. Well, if you look at it as a mathematical formula, I call it a paranoid with a blank check. You got a guy like Bush and Cheney who are always acting tough, but they're really telling us who they're afraid of. Oh, we got to be afraid of these people. Oh, we got to be afraid of those people. Oh, we got to be afraid of these people. We got to spend money being afraid on their paranoid dime. So, in other words, they tell us who we have to fear. They get to spend money to chase after their ghosts, and we never get to find out how that money's being spent. So
yeah, they're classic bullies. You know,
sure.
A lot of bluster out of fear. David, well said. Thank you very much. 57 minutes past the hour. Wrapping up the second hour of our program here live from the, let's just call it Mile High State. I kind of like that. Actually, everybody in Denver, they know what it is. Mile High. That's why Obama said that last night.
This is Tom Hartman. Live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. Mark Brewer on the line with us. He was elected president of the Association of State Democratic Chairs in 2003. He's been active in the Michigan Democratic Party for over 25 years. And currently is the vice chair of the DNC and the chairman of the ASDC, Democrats.org, of course, the website. Mark Brewer, welcome.
Glad to be with you.
Hey, Mark. As a Democrat from Michigan, how has the whole, you know, Michigan didn't get the vote, didn't get counted? How's that all played out now? Is it still an issue in Michigan?
No, not at all. It has been completely resolved. We have received, of course, our full vote. We've had full voting power all week on the floor of the convention.
Mm-hmm.
We have a wonderful hotel. We have great seats on the floor. We're going to have great seats on the floor tonight. There have been a host of Michigan speakers, Senator Stabenow, Congresswoman Kilpatrick at Conyers, of course, the governor. I'll be speaking tonight. So that is all firmly behind us.
That's great. That's great. I'm glad to hear it. What's your take on what's going on right now with let me ask you a very specific question. Last night, John Kerry gave a speech that basically ripped the Republicans a new one. I mean, it was the kick them upside the head speech that he should have given 4 years ago. There have been a couple of other speeches from the floor that have been really taking the Republicans to task. And yet none of this has made network news. None of this has made even cable news. The only way people can know about this is if they're watching C-SPAN. And why was there a strategic decision made to have the softer stuff in prime time? How does this all work?
Well, I think, you know, the primetime speeches have done the same kind of thing. We had President Clinton last night talking about the failed policies of Bush and McCain, and comparing them to what Barack Obama would do.
Yeah, but he wasn't using the kind of adjectives that John Kerry was.
I agree. John Kerry gave a very strong speech. I had some delegates say to me, if he had spoken like that 4 years ago, he'd be president now.
Yep.
It was a very strong speech. But I think what you're going to see, like you saw from Joe Biden last night, that was a tough speech, and he's going to be on the stump, as is Senator Obama, talking about what they would do, but also why we should not be electing John McCain. We're going to be very fortunate. Both Biden and Obama are going to be in Michigan this weekend for a rally on Battle Creek. And then Senator Obama is going to be with us on Labor Day in Detroit. So the campaign is in full swing.
Well, speaking as one Michigander to another, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, and lived there for the first 27 years of my life. Actually, I was born in Grand Rapids, grew up in Lansing. I'm really pleased to see that Michigan's back in play and you know, back in the game and doing well.
Right. I think what has happened is that other states have now seen that you can stand up to the system, you can stand up for reform and for principle, and live to fight another day. I mean, we are being treated no differently than we would have had we played by the rules last winter. So I think we've struck a real blow for reform, and we are getting all the attention we deserve as well.
There you go. Well, that's great. And we're on right now. We're on the air on WDTW in Detroit. We're on in Ann Arbor. We're on WTKG in Grand Rapids. You know, we've got a lot of listeners in the state of Michigan, and so I'm glad. I'm sure that they'll be very pleased to hear that. Democrats.org is the website. Mark Brewer, the vice chair of the DNC, the chairman of the ASDC. Mark, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Good to talk to you.
I do appreciate you dropping by. Thank you very much. It's 10 minutes past the hour. Our telephone number, 866-303-2270, toll-free all across the United States. Tony in New York. Hey, Tony, what's up? Tony, you're on the air.
Yes. Hey, it's great to talk to you, Tom. I listen to your program every day, and I've learned so much from you. You were talking about an act where Karl Rove could be prosecuted if he directed this. I see this as Cheney's office again throwing sand in the face of any prosecutorial, you know, investigation by Congress.
What's the this that you're talking about?
Which act?
You said, you know, this is throwing sand. What's the this that you're talking about?
The fact that the Cheney's office released this information because...
Which information?
The information that he had a guy in Georgia.
Oh, I see.
Because
I'm not sure that they released this information.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because if Rove's emails could be investigated under the Patriot Act, under the White House's definition of the Patriot Act, he's just a U.S. citizen. He's not protected by executive privilege. So Congress could ask for his emails that came from him to the United States. They could be subpoenaed.
Thank you so much.
Indeed. And should be. I mean, here's the most important thing you can do right now, Tony, is call your member of the House of Representatives. And this is the House of Representatives.
Yes.
Call your member of the House of Representatives and say, please demand that Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, and you should probably also call both of their offices, will bring to the floor of the House of Representatives for a full vote of the House the contempt citations against Karl Rove for refusing to appear before the Judiciary Committee.
Okay. I will. I encourage your listeners to do that because I do believe that this is Cheney's office throwing sand again.
And what this will do is it will break open. This could break open the Don Siegelman thing. This could break. I mean, because that's all about the prosecutors, right? The federal prosecutors.
Yes.
And Siegelman is a piece of that. Paul Miner is a piece of that. This would open so many doors, and there would be so many rats scurrying for the darkness so fast. And for some reason, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer have been very reluctant to bring this vote to the floor. And I think because they think it's going to be viewed as politicizing the Justice Department or whatever. You know, they're just afraid of conflict. But the fact of the matter is that between now and the election, it wouldn't produce conflict because as soon as the whole House voted for this, Karl Rove would simply say, "I'm still not coming," and it would end up, you know, going to another appeals court. It's going to be 6 months no matter what. But at least the House of Representatives is on record, and then they can and they're on record in a way that's going to pretty much force them to deal with this in the next session. And they can come back either during the lame duck session after the elections or after the first of the year with a new president. And now it's business that has to be continued. So that's why it's so important that we, every single one of us, call our members of the House of Representatives, call our elected members, and, you know, as I did with Jay Inslee on the air just a half hour ago, and say, you know, this guy is, you know, thumbing his nose at Congress. That's illegal. And, you know, he's in contempt of Congress, and he should be held in contempt of Congress, and he should be forced to testify. Tony, I got to move along, but thank you very much for the call and for your comments. Much appreciated. Sunshine in Arcata, California. Hey, Sunshine. Sunshine?
Yep.
Yep, you're on the air.
Hey. Hey, I just wanted to put out the word. I was thinking, well, I'd like to have people call the DNC to ask for the Iraq Veterans Against the War a chance to speak at the podium. And
yeah, well, nothing, that would be a wasted call because this thing is so scripted and so nailed down and it was all done well in advance and there are not going to be any changes.
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, so if you're going to make a phone call, call your member of Congress and ask to hold them in contempt. Hold Rove in contempt.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Thank you.
So thank you very much, Sunshine. I appreciate the call. Howard, speaking of Sunshine, Howard in Miami, Florida. Hey, Howard.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great. Is the sunshine there?
With respect to Karl Rove being called before Congress, one of my concerns is that I would rather Congress not hold him in contempt while Bush is still in power, because I believe that would constitute a crime that Bush could pardon him for. And then, if that is true, could pardon him for it, I would rather they wait until the next Congress and Bush is out of power. And I don't know if they do pardon him, could the Congress still subpoena him again?
It depends on how the pardon is written. And the fact of the matter is that Bush could pardon him right now in advance for anything. And, you know, whether he's held in contempt of Congress or not, it doesn't matter. And it's not going to change the equation on the pardon. So, I think that it's more important to get it on the record than, because I believe in all probability Bush is going to pardon everybody on the way out, you know, just like his daddy did with Caspar Weinberger and all those guys, all the criminals who were involved in Iran-Contra. But nonetheless, let's make this statement and let's do it now. And maybe we can even get something out there, before the lame duck session of Congress. I think that would be a really fine thing. This is the time. This is the really important time. It is such a critical. You know, there's only 3 weeks. Congress is going to come back in session for 3 weeks before the election, and in those 3 weeks, they're trying to get a lot done, because you know you got a lot of members of Congress who want to run on this stuff, because you know there's still another month after that of doing the elections. People are going to be out campaigning, so we need to make it clear to our members of Congress: you want my vote? Vote to hold Karl Rove in contempt of Congress. It's not a big deal. This is not a risky vote. This is not like impeachment where the Democrats get all weak-kneed and Nelly about it. This is just straightforward stuff. So contact your member of the House of Representatives and say, vote, please, pressure Pelosi and Hoyer to bring this to the floor.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
I don't have a city for you.
It's Valley Glen.
Okay. What's up?
First I want to compliment you on your coverage. Your coverage has been great at
thank you.
The convention. I'm sorry. And I want to just reiterate what you've been saying about playing hardball politics. Now is the time to play the hardball politics with the Republicans, because I've had lifelong friends who are Democrats, and they're so disgusted with the whole process. And I keep telling them, you gotta hold in there and call people like you said. But my suggestion is for the Congress or for the Democrats to actually arrest Karl Rove right now before the election.
Yeah, well,
and then pull a Don Siegelman on him, give him some of his own treatment.
Now, here's the problem: that requires the Justice Department. It was the Justice Department that did that to Don Siegelman, and the Justice Department is a branch of the executive. It's part of the executive branch. It answers to the President of the United States, not to the House of Representatives or the Senate. And the Senate or the House can't direct the Justice Department to behave in that way. They can only request it. Now, it used to be, back in the day, literally back up until the 1930s, and thank you, Liz, for the call, it used to be that if somebody was in contempt of the House of Representatives or the Senate, they had their own, they have the Capitol Police, they have their own police department, the House of Police, they would go out and arrest the person and bring them in and stick them in a jail cell down below the Capitol. That jail cell got remodeled out 10, 20 years ago, no longer exists, and they don't have, this is called inherent contempt, and they made a deal in the 1930s with the president, with Franklin Roosevelt, and with the executive branch, and that deal was that we will no longer have our police force arrest people and lock them up in the slammer in the basement of the Capitol if you would please have the Justice Department do this on our behalf. Yeah, great. That's just a deal that has not been honored. Congressman Dennis Kucinich is on the line with us. And, Congressman, glad you could make it back.
Hello.
Hey, and this time I think our lines are working.
You know what? It seems to be a problem again.
Yeah. Oh, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Well, okay, we could try to do this. It's a little bit muffled, but let's give it a try.
Okay, great. Congressman, you gave one wonderful speech. I want to congratulate you on that so much. And also, you know, we heard that you were suggesting that, and apparently it was originally in your speech, that this administration shouldn't get 4 or 8 more years. They should get 10 to 20.
Well, that was reported. I thought it was a pretty good line, but, of course, I'm not going to reveal the inner workings of the editing operation at the Obama campaign.
No, I'm not asking you to. I'm tipping my hat to you. I think it's great. So your take, by the way, John Kerry also gave a great speech, and he's really going after these guys. It didn't get covered in Maine in primetime coverage. Your speech didn't get covered by most of the media. How do we get the word out on this stuff?
I think we're going to have to be pretty blunt and pretty direct with people. It's going to have to be a lot of one-on-one campaigning. I experienced this in Cleveland the other day when I talked to actually a Democratic official who was wavering on who to vote for. And I said, wait a minute, are you kidding me? You look at where we are with our economy. You look at how many people have lost their jobs, how wages are being frozen or dropping in some areas, people losing their homes or retirement securities in jeopardy. How can anyone even think about a continuation of 4 years of these Republican economics, these neoconservatives who've turned the government into an engine for redistributing the wealth of the nation upward? Everything in the government is about extracting money out of the mass of people and putting it into the hands of a few. You know, people need to be approached from their own enlightened self-interest. And if we can appeal to people's self-interest, the Democrats can win, because it's in nobody's economic interest except a few to have a continuation of this Republican rule.
Yeah, absolutely. Your broad thoughts on the convention here and where we're going?
Well, it's really going to be essential that we unite the party along the economic lines. I see the economic issues as being the thing that will cause the Democratic Party to win, because there are so many people who are in a tenuous situation economically, and they have to see the Democratic Party as being the institution that will enable a new direction for America. We can win if we focus on the economics. If we get distracted by issues that do not relate to the economics, it's going to be a much tougher race.
Yeah. Some years ago for Common Dreams, they wrote an op-ed about how Dick Cheney activates the lizard brain in us. You know, as an old psychotherapist, the lowest part of our consciousness is that fight or flight instinct. And that's a really powerful thing. I mean, you don't think that the Republicans are going to try and gin up another war, or use war and peace issues, or use terrorism. Terrorists are going to get us, you know, try to terrify America again like they did in the last three elections, the last two elections. Congressman? Huh? I think we've lost the congressman. Apparently his phone died, and we've got to take a break. Congressman, if you can still hear me, I'm sorry. We're heading into a break, and thank you so much for your call. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you live from Denver in the Democratic National Convention. Stick with me.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Thank you. minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Christy Harvey, the Director of Strategic Communications for the Center for American Progress, on the line with us. Hey, Christy.
Hey, so I hear you're out in Denver. How's that going?
Just fine. I met your boss a couple of times, John Podesta, moderated a panel he was on, and then he was having lunch, and I very impolitely went over and interrupted him to introduce him to Governor Don Siegelman.
Oh, fun.
And who I think has the case that could end up putting Karl Rove in jail.
Really? I thought that was an interesting conversation.
Well, it didn't last very long, actually. He was with David Brock of Media Matters, and it was just a high
hour. Chit chat.
Yeah. In any case, it was nice to see him. He's a good guy. And he was on the show, actually, in fact, yesterday, the day before.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm wildly jealous. I wanted to be out there, and it just didn't work out, and I am just getting all the pool reports from all my friends who are out there and coworkers who are out there, and I'm seething with jealousy.
Yeah. Well, it's a wild ride, I'll tell you. If you're up for, no sleep for 3 days in a row at 5,000 feet. Today, T. Boone Pickens released a letter to NBC Universal CEO and President Jeff Zucker. Tell us about this.
The T. Boone Pickens letter?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Are you familiar with this?
I sort of glanced at it, but I don't know the ins and out of it.
Ah, okay. I am looking at the wrong page here then.
That's okay. Tell me about it.
Well, he's describing his disappointment with the network's decision not to run the Pickens Plan ad titled Iran, one of a series of nonpartisan ads. It's a 15-second ad, and he's quite upset. He says, get this one. Iran is changing its cars to run on natural gas, and we're not doing a thing here. They're doing this to use less oil and sell it for $120 a barrel. We can switch our cars to natural gas and stop sending our dollars to foreign countries.
Right.
And why would NBC say no to this? I am baffled. I'm just baffled.
I'm not sure, but we have one of our fellows here, Joe Rome, has just written something, I believe, on Salon.com about how we shouldn't be so quick to buy what T. Boone Pickens is selling, actually.
Yeah, because of water rights.
And it's because of water rights. And he also says that... It's really the plan that T. Boone Pickens is putting forward may not be what's best for America's energy plan. It may just be what's best for T. Boone Pickens. And so he's got this great new article on Salon.com. It's titled Ain't No Wind in T. Boone Pickens Sails. And he goes through point by point his problems with T. Boone Pickens plan.
Yeah. Well, I had him on the show, and afterwards I said, I don't get it. Why a guy who funded the Swift boats, a cranky billionaire, would all of a sudden turn green, unless it was just to make money.
Right.
And what he's asking for, what he was asking our listeners to do, is contact their elected representatives and basically use the right of eminent domain to take land to give him the ability to transmit that power out of the wind corridor. And it turns out that there's a bunch of water under that land that he's looking at.
Exactly. And there's no real plan in his plan to actually get Congress, which needs to be on board, to come up with plans for long-term investments.
Right.
There's really no investment strategy that he has besides everybody call your congressman. So it's very interesting. But I had only glanced at what was going on with his ad being rejected, and you never know why these networks are doing that.
Well, on other notes here, John Goodman, the father of health savings accounts, the ghostwriter behind the John McCain healthcare strategy, has solved the problem of uninsured Americans.
Congratulations. Yeah, this is the guy who, basically was the ghostwriter for John McCain's healthcare strategy, and they call him the father of health savings accounts. He's the guy who created that whole concept, and he has solved the problem of the uninsured in America. He gave an interview, and he said that the next president of the United States should sign an executive order requiring the Census Bureau to, quote, cease and desist from describing any American, even illegal aliens, as uninsured. So there you go, voila, problem solved. And here's what he's saying. He's saying that since you do have access to the emergency room, probably, that no one should be actually called uninsured because he says there is no such thing as an uninsured American.
Right. Try walking into an emergency room and saying, I think I need a physical to find out if there's anything wrong with me.
Well, exactly. This reminds me of, I don't know if you remember this, but back in, I think it was 2004, the Bush administration said they were no longer going to count the hungry in America. From now on, they were going to be calling them the nutritionally challenged. I'm dead serious. And so they solved the hunger problem in the country.
No more hunger.
No more hunger. We're just calling it something. This is the exact same thing. You know, we're going to solve the problem of the uninsured because there's no such thing as uninsured. Yeah, right. This is
The tragic reality is that Americans are really struggling. And Rutgers University just came out with a new study on this.
This is a fascinating study, and it really underscores the lack of confidence a lot of people have in the economy and how hard it's hitting just regular old Americans who are struggling now. And they have this new study that basically says that Americans are having trouble making ends meet and aren't able to make ends meet. And a couple of the statistics, they did a huge, huge poll and survey. 30% of American workers today have more credit card debt than they do retirement savings. More credit card debt than retirement savings. 25% say that they are less satisfied with their jobs today than they were a year ago. And 18% of American workers say that they're working more hours, not for more pay, but just working more hours because their bosses aren't able to or unwilling to hire people to take the place of those who've been laid off. So people are working longer hours, less money, not able to save for retirement, having to rely on credit cards. And I thought it got interesting because they asked people what needs to be done.
Right.
And overwhelming percentages of people said the government's got to get involved. We can't do this on our own. 80% said that the government needed to work on stopping jobs from moving overseas. Mm-hmm. 78% said the government must provide health care for people who lose their jobs and their health care access. So really interesting numbers because, you know, so often they say, oh, ownership society, people want to own their own debt, people want to own their own health care. And actually people are saying when the economy starts to tank or when the economy starts to skitter all over the road like it has been recently, there has to be somewhere people can turn for stability. And the government needs to take that role. And I just thought that was really interesting, especially in light of the two health care plans that the candidates are showing us both this week and next week.
Right. And, in fact, the vast majority of Americans are solidly right smack dab in the middle of the Democratic platform. And the Republican platform, on the other hand, is going to go right off the edge of the cliff.
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting.
Stem cells.
With the stem cells. Yeah, did you see this? The new Republican platform is calling for a ban on all embryonic stem cell research. I thought we were past this.
Even private research.
Even
if you want to set up a private corporation and
they want to go further than the already tragically horrible plan that we have now that President Bush put into place back in 2001.
Yeah, this is the We Hate Science bunch. There's no other way to describe them.
Well, and it should infuriate people. You know, this is not a partisan issue. That's what just blows my mind so much. We've got people like Nancy Reagan and Orrin Hatch who are, you know, they're not crazy liberals. They are very solid conservative Republicans who are out there fighting as hard as they can to lift the ban that's already in existence. And this new GOP platform is trying to appease that far-right religious base by saying, you know what, we're going to call for a total ban, public and private. And I think they know that there's no way that would ever happen because there's so many people. I mean, 70% of the nation wants there to be stem cell research.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're relying on the fact that it would be hard to get this to pass. But then again, you know, it's part of their platform and thus what John McCain will fight for.
Yeah, yeah. And at the same time that we're spending more and more money on private contractors in Iraq, these private contractors, in this case KBR, are being accused of some really nasty stuff here.
Oh, nasty stuff. Yes, yes, yes. There was a piece, I believe, in the Washington Post today that was describing what is really going on. A Washington law firm is filing suit against KBR Halliburton right now because the company and its subcontractors in Jordan were engaged in human trafficking, slavery. And what they did was they got these workers from Nepal, and they promised them that they were going to go work in restaurant kitchens in Jordan. They got them to Jordan, seized their passports, and forcibly took them to work in KBR kitchens in Iraq. And would not let them go. And this is not the first time, Tom. You remember, this isn't the first time we've heard this.
We heard reports of this 2 years ago.
We did, and we heard reports of a Kuwait group that did this with the building of the U.S. Embassy over in Baghdad.
Yep.
This isn't the first time, so it seems the State Department is maybe turning a blind eye for pragmatism's sake and letting this human trafficking and slavery go on. Disgusting. Yeah.
Meanwhile, U.S. military officers are indicted for taking bribes in the construction of the airfield in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and we've heard about this story before, but they finally were officially indicted. They took about $100,000 in order to pass big, lucrative government contracts to rebuild the airfield in Afghanistan to people who wanted it.
Right, and these are contractors.
These are contractors. So these are military guys who then took these bribes to allow their friends or people who gave them money.
You know,
to get these.
Yeah, you know what seems so common sense is that our military should be our military. The food should be done by soldiers doing KP. You want your military. You want your supply lines. You even want your food prepared by somebody who, if all hell breaks loose, can grab a gun and participate in the action. Number one. And number two, that if construction is going to be done in the Middle East, it should be done by Middle Eastern firms the same way that we rebuilt Europe. You know,
that's just common sense. Tom Hartman for president.
Yeah. Christy Harvey, the Director of Strategic Communications for the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. Thanks, Christy.
Thank you.
And Mike Check Radio, by the way, as well. 45 minutes past the hour here in America.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
By SEIU and its 2 million members, dedicated to creating justice for all American workers and their families. Their website, SEIU.org. We'll also be, just a heads up, on Monday from noon to 7 p.m. on Monday, September 1st, SEIU's Take Back Labor Day Festival on Harriet Island, Minneapolis, hip hop acts, atmosphere, a whole bunch of things. I'll be speaking there along with Andy Stern and others. And on Tuesday, September 2nd at 5:30, the doors open. The Voice of Minnesota invites you to the Party for Change. It'll be me, Stephanie Miller, Jim Ward, Chris Lavoie, John Elliott, a whole bunch of great folks. And let's see, Ed Schultz, Bill Press, I guess I already said Bill. Anyhow, it's a party till 9:30. The doors open at 5:30. It's a Black Bear Crossing on the lake, located on the historic Como Lakeside Pavilion. And so check that out. It should be a lot of fun. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. John in Coral Springs, Florida. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better.
Hey, listen, great job you're doing.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring something up, a couple of things up. I worked at Union Day Carry run, and I was actually working and helping out people in the voting booth and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, everywhere I went, there were these incredibly small areas where the machines were located. The lines were blocks long, and it was meant to be, you know, an obstacle to vote. I mean, they made it very difficult for people to go and vote. And people were voting for Kerry.
John, this was in largely Democratic districts by any coincidence?
Yeah. And you know what is interesting is that there were lawyers working around, and you could tell the difference between the Democratic lawyers and the Republicans. The Republicans were very few. The Democrats were several of them. The Republicans wouldn't talk to anybody. I was actually passing water to people who would stay on the line because the line would go on and on and on. And I was there for like 4 hours, and the line kept on getting longer. And the interesting thing was people began to complain when they were actually punching Kerry on the computer and Bush will come out.
Yeah.
And they just didn't do anything about it. So here we are talking about all this wonderful thing, and it's almost like we are doing all the promotion for this wonderful book, but the book hasn't been written yet.
Yeah, I know, John. I'm very, very concerned. I'm very
so you know what the hell is going on? I mean, are they going to do something about this, or we're going to go through the same thing? Because these people are not going to just stand there and wait for it to be defeated. They're going to do whatever.
It's going to be. John, thank you, and well said. I think it's going to be up to us. I really do. The Democratic Party, as much as I think that it's very, very important that we have a Democrat as president and the strong Senate and House and all that, we need to be the movement. We need to drive this thing. Political change always drives from the bottom up, not from the top down. And the Democrats have made these political calculations, which I think are stupid, but they've made them. Number one, that impeaching George Bush would cause them to lose the election in 2008, which I think is the exact opposite of reality. But they believe it. It's their story. They believe it. And number two, that if they talk about voting machines flipping or the fact that our vote has been privatized, which I'm telling you, Tom Paine is rolling over in his grave. He said the vote is the franchise by which all other franchises are exercised. To take it from a man is to reduce him to tyranny. And here we have our vote has been privatized, and the Democrats have decided this isn't a good thing to talk about either because it might discourage people from coming out and voting. The fact of the matter is they are going to steal votes in this election. They're going to do it through caging. They're going to do it through the techniques that you talked about, making it harder for people to vote. They're going to do it through challenging votes. They're going to do it, and they may well do it by hacking voting machines. Right across the board. So the bottom line for all of us has to be two things. Number one, we talk about these things. And number two, if they're going to steal 5 million votes this year, we have to show up with 10 million votes. We have to make the election theft-proof. There's just no other way to do it. Jeff in Tacoma. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. A couple of things. First, of course, I think Don Siegelman should be nominated for Attorney General of the United States.
I agree. We're going to have him on the program again tomorrow. Yesterday and the day before, I've been walking him around Radio Row, introducing him to talk show host after talk show host, trying to get his word out. And a number of people, Randy put him on her show, and Stephanie put him on
great.
Her show. It's just...
It'd be a great signal for Barack to show America that he really is committed to justice and the Constitution. The other thing is I was just waiting on hold and flipping through the paper. An article from the Washington Post, U.S. has 37,000 private spies. Now we know how many there are. And it just shocks me that social activists all around the country are doing all this great work, emailing, phone calls and stuff, and the Republican Party and, the mafia and anybody else could hire somebody that works at one of these companies and get our information.
37,000 private spies. Amazing. Jeff, thanks. Thanks for the info. We got just a minute here left. Yosef in Manhattan.
Yeah, hey, Tom. Just was calling because I think the Democrats need a slogan. And what I've been telling people is if you like George Bush, you're going to love John McCain.
Yeah, that's a good one.
They need a real quick one-liner like that, and I just think, I don't know, maybe some of your people or somebody could move that up through the ranks, because I tell everybody that, and they're like, yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah. It would be amazing, just amazing.
But I do.
Ted Koppel, if you'd just like to shout out into our microphone, it would be great to meet you. We're just about off the air here, hello?
I'm perfect for... 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I get bored.
It's an honor to meet you.
Well, you're very kind.
And here comes the music, so we're out.
There you go. All right.
Thanks so much for being with us today. It's Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Don't forget, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Call your member of Congress and demand that they hold Karl Rove in contempt of Congress. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.